Welcome to Sunstone. I'm going to actually read this because it's Thursday and it's morning and it might be some people's first session. So I'm going to read. It's kind of lengthy, but I'm just going to read it so we all are on the same page moving forward for the day. So you are at session 134. Mormon feminists have their say. Ordained women 5 years later. It's been 5 years? 5 years. Crazy. Before we begin, we have a few announcements. We ask that the cell phones are turned off and those attending will be respectful and attentive. Please look in your name badge sleeve and notice that we've included an interactive way for you to reach out to Sunstone attendees and come to new chords of understanding. Take some time to read over the materials in your name badge and use this as an opportunity to pay attention to the way you can build new bridges. Is someone attending the conference alone? Go introduce yourself. Does someone voice an opinion that you disagree with? Find an opportunity to discover common ground. The threads in your name badge are an opportunity to break the ice. So Sunstone's always like a family reunion. So become familial, right? Awesome. The session is being recorded. You'll be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to Sunstone Magazine at the registration desk as well. Concessions are open in the venue for lunch, where there's a lot of restaurants in the area, and but try to get back between 1:45 and 1:50 for the 2 o'clock session to start. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask that both audience and presenters keep within the framework so that we can allow for time for the next session to start. And here we go. We're going to talk about this session. 5 years ago, ordained women dared to ask LDS church leaders to prayerfully consider whether women should be ordained. A bold move required a group of unflinching, confident, brave supporters. Jennifer and Joanna share stories of what happened when Mormon feminists dared to ask women to be included in the power structures of the church. Come hear a sampling of the stories that will be featured in their forthcoming book. A little bit about our presenters. Jennifer Crow is a fellow of the Honors College at Middle Tennessee State University, where she is working on a master's degree in sociology. Her academic research is primarily focused on how women's experience of religion, and she has presented her research at ordained women conferences across the country. Joanna Smith is the founder and executive director of Utah's largest women-only nonprofit, Utah Women Unite. She works to address political and social inequality through education, advocacy, and awareness. She is working on a marketing management degree through
Western Governors.
Western Governors University. She works full-time as the CEO of The Wave. All right, so we're going to turn it over to them. They're going to present. They're going to tell some stories about ordained women, their stories, some other women's stories, where we've been in the last 5 years. And then I think they're going to have some time for some interactive Q&A. So anything you want to know about ordained women and how that all went down or anything about these presenters, get ready, start thinking. All right, take it away.
Thank you. All right, is this a good distance, or do I need to be closer?
Closer.
Wait. Got to manage the eyes and the... Okay, so ordained women started with a transformational message.
Sorry. Go ahead. Okay. Done. Distracting.
Then you can turn that one off. Okay. Alrighty, so ordained women started with a transformational message and a declaration of statement in its very name, ordained women. Instead of structural change to an institution, the transformational changes that occurred were within the individual. The supporters of ordained women have experienced significant changes to their lives, have learned through their activism, how to create transformational changes in their lives, in their families, in their communities, in their churches, in their governments, and most importantly, within themselves. This session, we will talk about how being involved as a profile holder or supporter of ordained women, how that wove a thread of activism, empowerment, and discovery into these supporters' lives. We're going to start with Joanna Smith. She submitted her profile on October 25th, 2013. And if you remember, ordained women got started in March of 2013. So you can do the next slide. There we go. So this is Joanna Smith. I am a homeschooling mother of four amazing children. I married the love of my life for time and all eternity 13 years ago. 6 years ago, he left the church and made me question every aspect of my entire life, including faith. And it was the greatest trial and the greatest blessing that my Father in heaven has ever given me. I am currently in the Relief Society presidency in my ward, and I'm honored to be able to serve as he would have me serve. I don't want to change who I am or who women are. I want to engage and uplift the church. I love being a woman and honor that. But I believe Black church members had a right to ask their leaders why men couldn't have the priesthood anymore when they once could. And I feel like I can ask about my level of participation in ordinances. I want the priesthood from how it is taught in the temple and the way Joseph Smith taught it to be and gave it to women. I want to be called a priestess out in public, just like the scriptures teach me that I am. I want my children to see that I was made in my Heavenly Mother's image. I want to know what a priestess means in our modern world, and I want to get that guidance from the Lord's mouthpiece. It is a beautiful message, and I have both patience and faith that my questions and prayers will be answered. So that was Joanna 5 years ago.
Well, it's not Joanna now. And actually, I haven't read that in like 3 years, so I've teared up a bit. So you want me to go over where I've been in 5 years? So I'm divorced from that love of my life. Turns out when you stand up for what's most sacred to you, it becomes easier to stand up for things that are not as, once you challenge the patriarchy and understand that you have a voice, you can't turn that off. So for me, that was life-changing. I wrote that profile. I was put on the board of Ordained Women, probably within a couple weeks of that, maybe a month after that or something like that. Very shortly after that, I was put on the board. And then I served on the Ordained Women board for 3 years, loved it. They're phenomenal women and a male ally. And it was a life-changing experience for me. I got a divorce. I moved back to Utah specifically with the purpose of recognizing women's equality and working towards addressing that on cultural and political and social and religious levels. I started a nonprofit with a bunch of amazing people called Utah Women Unite. We did the largest march on the Capitol on the day of the inauguration, Women's March, and instantly grew a nonprofit to 12,000 women. And we have been on the Legislature Hill every year since, working to get laws passed for equal pay and just taking the underrepresentation and marginalization of women to a new level that Utah hasn't seen in decades. So I did that. Also, I ended up dating and then marrying a board member of Utah Women Unite, a fellow board member. So that's my husband there, actually, next to me. Mark Barnes and I were married last fall in our own version of a mountain temple church in Waterton National Park. And we were married by Kate Kelly. So we have fully embraced women's equality and worked very hard in our lives to make sure that women's leadership is seen and felt and heard in spiritual ways for our children and in social and political ways as well. I currently just actually am resigning as the executive director of Utah Women Unite, and I am now about to launch a new company that I founded called The Wave Women. It is a private social club and co-working space for women in Salt Lake City. So that is me over the last 5 years. I've been busy.
Thank you. So do you want to read my profile or do you want me to read it?
We're going to read. Let's switch this. Okay. Have you read this recently? See, you were more prepared than I was. Jennifer wrote her profile June 15th, 2014. Basically, 1 year in.
1 year in.
Yeah. But you did attend the action, correct, in that spring?
No.
Not that year.
Not
okay.
That year.
So that clarifies. Okay. She says, I am someone who strives to be defined by more than who I am in relation to another individual. I am more than a mother. I am more than a wife, more than a sister, more than a woman. I am a human. As such, I believe in equal treatment to all individuals, regardless of race, gender, or sexual orientation. I come late to the support of ordained women, partly because when I first heard of them, I was indifferent. Indifferent not because I didn't see the lack of equality or see the need to address some issues regarding women in the LDS Church, but because I was unsure if my support would make any difference. My experience with the church taught me that a woman's voice carries very little weight. I have followed the typical Mormon women's journey in life. Temple marriage, returned missionary husband, dropped out of college to raise my children, and served faithfully in church assignments. My favorite time in the church was while I served as the young women's president. I loved helping those girls form opinions about themselves and the world through the lens of the gospel. It was in this calling I felt my voice had a place, and I was heard. I recently enrolled in college to finish a degree I started many years ago. Yay! I was given an assignment to pick a controversial subject in the news that I wasn't passionate about, form an opinion, and then write a research paper on that subject. I quickly decided to study the ordained women movement and to follow the April 5th General Conference priesthood session request and the resulting outcome. I wanted to make an informed, educated decision on my thoughts for supporting ordained women. Through my research, I concluded that the ordination of women to the priesthood is necessary for equality to exist in the LDS Church. I was fascinated by the historic precedents set by Joseph Smith in instructing women to bless the sick. The early doctrines of the church point to the larger role women once held in participating in what today we call priesthood ordinances. I learned that it was in 1946 that Joseph Fielding Smith outlined church policy to restrict women from participating in ceremonial healing blessings. The only remnant that remains of women's authority to bless today is found in the washing and anointing ceremony performed by women in the temple. It's performed only on women by women. It became clear to me that the church policy is all that stands in the way for a female ordination, policy that has been changed in the past to serve the church's needs and can and should be changed again. I have wanted to add my voice and profile to the Ordained Women website for some time now, but have procrastinated to let my thoughts stew. Today, as I read news of the church council called on behalf of Kay Kelly, I didn't even catch those dates. I knew my profile must be submitted. I must stand in solidarity with brave sisters who have stood before me. If church discipline comes my way, so be it. I welcome the conversation that has come as more people stand and ask for previous blessings to be reinstated to the sisters of the church. I believe that women should be ordained. How far have you come?
All right. I guess it's only 4 years for me since I submitted my profile. I've graduated from as an undergrad and am now in my journey as a graduate student, a fully funded graduate student, mind you. and I've become an activist in many ways. There's me in attending the Women's March in D.C., which was another important thing for me. I had recently had surgery, and my best girlfriend agreed to push me along the path. So that was incredible. But as Joanna was reading my profile, it reminded me of two things I wanted to share with you. When I ended with saying, if church discipline comes my way, so be it, that kind of did occur. So my profile was submitted June 15, 2014 is when it was posted. June 14, it was a Sunday sacrament meeting. I had been asked to speak on, it was right around Father's Day, and I was asked to speak on the attributes of a righteous priesthood holder. I declined three times before they pressured me into accepting the sacrament meeting talk. And I told him, I don't really think that would be a good idea. They had no idea what a bad idea brilliant. That would be. But it was brilliant. It was brilliant. So when I stood that morning in sacrament meeting and shaking and worried about what was going to happen after I spoke, I still don't regret a single word I said. I stood and I mentioned what the attributes are of kindness and hope and charity and love and acceptance, and that these attributes have no gender, and they have no gender because we all need to develop these Christ-like attributes, because someday we believe in the restoration of the fullness of the gospel and that men and women will be ordained to the gospel. And I went on to talk about the historic precedent and how Patty Sessions gave healing blessings and how it was a policy change in the 1950s that changed women's ability to give healing blessings. And the following week, my bishop approached my husband and said, you need to get your wife in order, because I don't want to excommunicate your wife like Kate Kelly's bishop needs to excommunicate her. The week after that, my husband and I were both released from our callings. He is the young men's president. I was the 16, 17-year-old Sunday school teacher. And shortly thereafter, we moved for me to finish my education, and I've never returned to a LDS sacrament meeting since then. So that was my interesting thing. One other thing I wanted to say before moving on is that this past November, my husband was called by our state president and asked if he would come to a meeting with him. And my husband was interested enough to and curious enough to go, and I said, I have no interest. I'm going to stay at home. However, that morning, we had got word that it wasn't only the state president, but it was a general authority that wanted to meet with my husband. And so I said, I think I'm going to tag along and find out what's going on. And in that meeting, when I was asked to introduce myself, and I said, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what I research, these are my findings, and because I researched the consequences that Mormon women face, Mormon feminists face, because of their activism within their communities, and so figuring out what the negative consequences and what they face, so I had a chance to discuss this with a general authority, and what he clarified for me was that it is only current church policy that women are not ordained, that current doctrines support the ordination of women. But we don't have any of our general authorities who are willing to say that in public.
Yeah, and I think that, so we're going to kind of talk about some other profile holders and kind of the story of what's happened over 5 years, but I do want to address this discipline elephant in the room, and that is that many, many women had disciplined. Well, Kate was the only one excommunicated. There were many women bullied. There were many women released. There were many women who lost their families. Discipline can occur in a lot of varied ways within the mainstream Mormon faith. And so a lot of women have gone through that. I know I met with my stake president at least 36 times, regularly, all the time. I know that when I moved after my divorce, I was on the board of ordained women, I was still active. When I moved, I know that church headquarters tracked me down with Google image tracking before I even knew my own address. So that is a huge part of what makes these women so brave, and that's a huge part of why we are writing a book, because we want that bravery in a sacred space and saved. Because, well, that isn't what we're going to be focusing on, what we're talking about today, of people's growth. That is a huge part of the why it's such a radical thing. We have people that we will be focusing on that literally haven't spoken to family members since the day their profile went live. They are no longer invited to family reunions. This is not a light topic to many, many mainstream Mormons. So let me read this profile and you can...
Yes. Okay.
So Alexandra, she put up her profile June 26, 2014. It reads, "Hi, my name is Alex. I was raised in the church since the age of 2 and remained very faithful until the birth of my son 2 years ago. When my Oliver was born, I really started to think about the inequality in the church. Having a child makes you think about the future even more. And for me, the injustice of inequality came sharply into my view when I became a mother. For all the great things the church has going for it, and there are many wonderful things about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the true inequality between men and women is something that I can no longer even begin to pretend is okay. I grew up being told over and over that the ability to have children was equal to the priesthood. I no longer see motherhood equal to priesthood. It's not equal. It's not equal at all. A woman may be able to give birth, but within the church, she's not even allowed to bless her child or stand in the circle or hold them when their child is being blessed, all because she is a woman. How is that okay? I no longer believe in a God who would so deeply undervalue his daughters that he would ban them from holding the same power to act in God's name as his sons. Members talk about how the church is perfect, but the people are not. I believe that the church won't be close to the perfection it claims until women are given the same rights and opportunities as the men, until the priesthood is no longer just a power held only by males, but a power all of us are able to claim. The ability to act in the name of God should not be dictated by gender, but by the strength and intentions of the heart. Women who want the priesthood should be given the opportunity to have it, but as it stands, many are afraid to even ask that question aloud. That has to change. It must change. I want the church to be a place where men and women can truly work together in building the kingdom of God. I believe women should be ordained."
Thank you. So, Alexandra now, she goes by, she also had received a little bit of discipline for her submitting her profile. She said that was one of the most devastating things to her, that she received some support as an unwed mother. She's not shy about that fact, but she was more maligned by her church community because of her feminist activism. But once she had found her voice and discovered how courageous she could be, when the Planned Parenthood clinic in her hometown was lost its funding, she created a march for Planned Parenthood. And do you know more about this, Joanna?
Yeah. Alex actually is a kind of a leader. She's been featured in many stories around the country since the Women's March. She's officially part of the Women March leadership team. She is... become a very outspoken activist for women's rights, reproductive rights, equal pay.
She's
into pipeline. She's gone to. I actually met her in D.C. We marched. Utah Women Unite went to D.C. with 1,000 people from Utah to march, and she came running up to me and was like, "You don't know who I am, but I love you." And she introduced herself, and she was wonderful. And then we met again at the Women's March convention. And she is a very public, outspoken women's rights activist in the U.S.
She is. And she also has become a delegate for her state for the Democratic Party. So she gets to, I think she's in Iowa, so being a delegate is kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. So that's where she is, but some of her experiences I wanted to share was that Feminist Mormon Housewives is where she got introduced to Mormon feminist thought, and she says that is her safe space, and that was the most welcoming space that she had ever found while she was an active member of the church. What she wants people to know about members of ordained women is, where did that go? No, that was what I was thinking with somebody else. She has said that when Kate Kelly was excommunicated, her profile was posted on June 26th, and Kate was excommunicated on
2 weeks later.
2 weeks later. So it was really close, right around that time. And I've heard this from a lot of the women, is that they actually, ordained women and Mormon feminism renewed their commitment to be active participants at church, and that it was Kate Kelly's excommunication that really showed them, or taught them, that their voice didn't matter, that there was no place for them in the church. And that's, so it was, although it was Kate, as we all know, it trickled down to so many women, and it devastated them, and she wanted people to know that. She said, if they didn't want her, then they wouldn't want me. And that is not an uncommon thought for some of these women. Again, when she talked about feminist Mormon housewives, it was women gave her the freedom and space to learn and to speak, and she's grateful to the church because it gave her speaking skills. And one of the greatest things Joanna pointed out in my notes was that she says that I will never make myself small again, and I will not apologize for taking up space. And that may or may not sound like a big deal to you, but when you have lived in such a small space and in such a small life and not having your voice heard or weighed in the important decision-making processes of the institutions that you participate in, this is a very big discovery.
Yeah.
So.
We're going to move quickly on. So I'm going to read Abby's, and I might shorten. Here we go. We're going to go through Abby's here. Abby is our profile holder a documentary made about the ordained women's story. So a lot of people understand hers. Hers was put up very early in December of 2013. She says, I am a lifelong member of the church. My parents are converts, both taught by sister missionaries before meeting each other and marrying. I'm happily married with three children. I'm an army wife, a marathon runner, a landlord, a stay-at-home mom. I've been a gospel doctrine teacher, a member of the Young Women's Presidency, primary and nursery teachers, compassionate service leaders, and I'm currently the secretary to the primary presidency in my ward. When I was 19 at BYU, I wanted to serve a mission more than anything. I tried to wait patiently until 21, but was frustrated to watch all the young men in my singles ward open their mission calls while I couldn't. One day when I talked with another new elder in my ward and explained how badly I'd always wanted to go on a mission, and my hope that someday they would lower the age requirement for sister missionaries, he said, but Abby, that will never happen. Missionary work is a priesthood responsibility. Women's most important role is to become mothers. God needs you as a young mother more than he needs just another missionary. You need to focus on that. That bothered me, and I spent a lot of time on my knees trying to understand why I had such an intense desire to serve a mission, only to feel that I was being personally rejected. I never did serve that mission. I was dating my husband on my 21st birthday and let my dream of serving a mission go, and I married him. And I do love him. But last fall, when the missionary ages were lowered, I felt like my prayers from several years ago were answered. I didn't get the opportunity to serve, but seeing so many young women in my ward prepare for their missions or are already going makes me so, so happy. I'm glad to be part of a church that is open to positive change. On Sunday, I overheard another ward's sacrament meeting as I walked through the foyer. The topic was missionary work. She was speaking about the missionary surge since they lowered age requirement, specifically in sister missionaries. She spoke of what a blessing this had been, as sister missionaries can go places and reach hearts that the elders never would be able to. It made me smile, and it made so much sense to me. Women are now doing what was once solely, and is still primarily, a priesthood responsibility. And not only are they doing it well, they are becoming invaluable to the church doing that role. Until recently, I had never even considered ordaining women to the priesthood, but when I set aside a lifetime of preconceived notions and really considered the possibility, my heart screamed, yes, this is right. I know my friends and families will disagree with me, and that is fine. So I'm grateful to be part of this church and community. where I feel safe to speak what is in my heart. I believe women should be ordained to the priesthood and that innumerable blessings will follow when this happens.
So I got to interview Abby in her home, if you want to, do I have anyone? And she has, since she's still an attending member of her ward, and she participates as she can, she has become involved in the Mormon Building Bridges and the affirmations. She's become an advocate and a supporter of the LGBT rights and the how they are treated within their communities. But one of the things about Abby that I wanted to share is that when we were speaking, she said, I had asked her if she had ever received or participated in women's blessings, because that's a practice that some Mormon feminists have experience in. And this is what she kind of had to say about that. She said, I remember meeting Robin Linkhart, who's one of the apostles, at Feminist Mormon Girls Camp one of those years. And then she asked me if I knew Robin. She's one of the apostles for the Community of Christ. She's a really nice lady. And I remember sitting there and talking all the while thinking, can you give me a blessing? But I was like, no, that's weird. I don't want to make her. I don't know why. I was just, and I wish she would have, because I wanted to be like, I wondered what it would be like to have a woman give me a blessing. And I don't, because I always hear these stories about women giving blessings at Feminist Mormon Girls Camp, and I'm like, I don't feel like I have the belief that is necessary to put hands on someone's head and give them a blessing, but I would love to get a blessing from a woman and to be able to share that experience with other people. Like, yep, I've had a woman give me a blessing, and my hair didn't start on fire or anything. I'm alive. So, what's really exciting about this is that, and we'll get to Nancy Ross in just a teeny bit, but Nancy Ross will be ordained to the Community of Christ on Sunday at Feminist Mormon Girls Camp, and Abby plans on attending, watching that ordination, and asking for that blessing that she wanted so many years ago. So that's Abby right now.
I'll
read Gina's. Okay.
Yes.
All right, so Gina Colvin submitted her profile on May 25, 2014. It is a given that women aren't equal to men in the church, and any argument that brawls with this fact is a nonsense. While men are granted the exercise of ecclesiastical and managerial authority over women, that is called a patriarchy. Mormonism is without a doubt a patriarchy. But simply naming it a patriarchy ignores its additional features, because it's not just a patriarchy. It's a colonial patriarchy. It's a white patriarchy. It's a class-based patriarchy. It's an American-centric conservative patriarchy bound to a particular economic and political order that is nearing its use-by date. So will the ordination of women necessarily address those ideologies that have normalized a broader and more extensive suite of inequalities? I remain skeptical. Can women in Mormon power be relied upon to initiate an interrogation of all forms of marginalization and oppression? I think not. Hold on. Okay. But the same can be said for all forms of oppression. Simply changing the face, the class, the color, or the gender of unequal power structures doesn't alter the fact of those institutional and ideological processes that give rise to inequality in the first place. Sometimes it doesn't matter who is in charge. If the structures of power are flawed, you can put anyone in the rowboat, but it won't change the pool of the riptide. Whoever has the oars will have to change the currents or elicit the help of others to pull the boat into shore. Contemporary cultural Mormonism has evolved without a robust, healthy, healing emphasis on diversity, inclusion, and social justice. Yes, it's mostly big on kindness, charity, purity, and good manners, but it is a kind of mannerliness that cracks and shatters quickly, revealing a cruel and nauseating intolerance for change, questioning, collaboration, or even raising the possibility of spiritual wickedness in high places. Our faith experiences are kaleidoscope and depend on more than our gender. They depend on our class, our race, our culture, and a myriad of other social and human conditions. Asking for power to be expanded sideways doesn't necessarily mean that our spiritual lives will be automatically and collectively expanded to incline us toward unraveling oppressive power structures. It doesn't necessarily mean that poor brown and black women will be represented in the galleries of LDS leadership. It doesn't necessarily mean that poor white, brown, and black children will be fed. It doesn't necessarily mean that our diverse cultures, conditions, practices will be included as we seek to create a global Mormon religious identity that eclipses an American religious imperial culture. It doesn't necessarily mean that we will be better clothed than naked, feed the hungry, give shelter to the weary, take in the unwanted, relieve the plight of the oppressed, care for the elderly, or hear the voices of the unpopular. It doesn't even necessarily mean that bursts of color and light will fill the night air as we join together in symphony of high spiritual feeling. Ordaining women could mean very little in the grand scheme of things. Or it could be the great symbol of hope for women and men across the world. Hope that a corporate behemoth can change, that core values can be questioned, that institutional power can be contested, and that ultimately all will find the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints a magnanimous and empowering home wherein we can sing of Zion with glorious belief.
That's beautiful. So I got to interview Gina, and we all know Gina's phenomenal. She was on the board of directors for a year, the board of directors for Ordained Women, and she has contributed largely to this community. I'm going to kind of fast forward because a lot of people know her, but I do want to touch on, she was recently baptized into,
the Anglican Church.
Anglican Church, in Christ Church. And these are her words about that experience. I've long ached for a community, for solid ground under my feet where I can experience full belonging and acceptance rather than the dissenter status. After prayer, fasting, and spiritual direction, a couple of weeks ago, I decided to be baptized again. So under a full moon in the ocean, a woman priest baptized me with the assistance of another woman. The male stood on the beach and watched. This week I was asked by another priest if I felt Anglican. I don't know what that means because I'm too Mormon. I suppose I do. I feel belonging that I haven't felt in a long while. But it was never about becoming something else. It was always about getting my soul stable with God. Mormonism is so anxious and is often hard on my heart. You never know what shock or coldness will be around the corner, even when it's something lovely and good. And then this Sunday, Nathan is her husband, is off on stake business, and I'll be going to All Souls Church at 11. After Lent, I'll likely go back to my ward when I can, in wholehearted differentiation. Tonight, the LDS missionaries, a priest and a young social justice advocate for the Anglican diocese, will come and share my table. That's community. That is my community. And I find that beautiful. So she has found a way to be completely, truly Mormon and completely, truly who she would like to be. And that's beautiful.
That is. I also do want to make a plug for her latest edited book, Gina Colvin and Joanna Brooks, with lots of contributors, some of them in the room today, Decolonizing Mormonism. So that's also what she's been involved with doing.
We're going to read Nancy's here, and then I'll let you tell about the interview. Nancy Ross was on one of the founding members of the Ordained Women Board. She was incredibly instrumental in many of the actions. She put up her profile March 19th, 2013. I think she was one of the original 25. My husband and I were married in the St. George Temple after meeting in graduate school. I teach art history at a state university in Utah. I've held a number of callings, including Relief Society teacher, pianist, and music leader, Cub Scout leader, primary and early morning seminary teacher, and activity days leader. I like to read and write and play music with my two daughters. I love the scriptures and all their messiness, and I'm blogging my way through the Book of Mormon. I grew up in a difficult family. My belief in God's love for me has been an important anchor throughout my life. Mormonism continues to shape my belief in God, forms a significant component of my sense of community, and it offers me hope for a life of eternal learning and progression. Today, something happened that I think highlights the need for women to hold the priesthood and positions of real leadership in the LDS Church. My husband and I were cleaning up after dinner this evening, and he asked my opinion on something. My 5-year-old daughter asked him why he needed my advice when he was the boss of our family. We have not taught our daughters that he is the boss of our family. She learned that recently in primary, as they were learning the song, "The Family is of God." I explained to her that in our house, we try to make decisions together in partnership. As I was discussing this with her, I worried that the egalitarian marriage that my husband and I tried to model is minimized by the LDS Church culture and practice. I worry that my 5-year-old daughter is being taught both direct and subtle ways that women's voices don't matter. I want her to know that my voice matters, but ultimately I want her to know that her voice matters. I believe that women should be ordained.
So, Nancy, I also got to interview Nancy, and one of the things I wanted to run through, she had some great things to say, and when I asked her what she would like believing, current practicing, attending Mormons to understand about ordained women, is that the supporters have and had a sincere belief and a desire. They were active. Desire to ordain women was a really sincerely held religious piece of her testimony. She had her own spiritual experiences around discovering the history of the ordination of women. And she would like members to understand how much courage it took to just state that simple fact, that just state a simple historical fact, and that it wasn't an easy thing to do. She also said that in her patriarchal blessing, which she says is a document that has guided and continues to guide her life, was stated that she would be a leader in the church. And once she became an active supporter of ordained women and a member of the board, she saw that her voice was diminished and that she would not ever get that opportunity to be a leader in the LDS church because of her participation. She said that her talents and her voice were no longer welcome, and all she ever wanted to do was to be more involved at church. I loved church. I still love church, is what she said. And today, I get to do all of those things I never got to do, and I love it, just for a different church. Because Nancy had been baptized and confirmed into the Community of Christ Church, and Nancy this Sunday will be ordained at Feminist Mormon Girls Camp as an elder in the Community of Christ Church. And so Nancy has kind of come full circle, and she's still very much driven by her spiritual heart.
Yeah.
And another plug. She just finished editing this book.
That's her book?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where We Must Stand, 10 Years of Feminist Mormon Housewives.
Nancy has been kind of instrumental from the starting of Ordained Women and then to guiding so many women. I remember when I first put up my profile, she called and asked me, I think at the time she was like volunteer coordinator or something, and she called and asked me what I could do to help. And I was like, I don't really have any talents. I just am a mom. And she was like, you're amazing, and if you can't realize that, then you can't help anyone. And I was like, well, I don't really know. And she literally sat with me as a complete stranger on the phone for like 25 minutes telling me all of my strengths. And I'm like, but how do you know that? And she's like, because I do. And that's just the type of person Nancy is. And seeing her put up her profile and become such a leader in the movement and continue on that journey just exemplifies she's willing to grow and get uncomfortable in the uncomfortable spaces and then grow some more spiritually, and it's quite beautiful. So our next one is Heather Moore Farley. She was the very first profile. the very first one. When the profile, when the site went live, they wanted 25, and they hoped to heck that they would get 25. And she said, I want to be in that. And she was not afraid to put her voice in there. She posted in her profile, I love the earth, gardening, and biking. I'm a fan of Doctor Who, cherry pie, and high fives. My husband and I have been married for almost 7 years, and we have 3 children. I'm a stay-at-home parent, and I love to knit. Both of my parents joined the church in their teens and met an institute. I was baptized at 8, got my young womanhood recognition, and was so excited to join Relief Society that I started going when I turned 18, even though I was still in high school. I've held many callings, from Relief Society instructor to primary and nursery and every piano calling you can imagine. I'm currently on my ward's activities committee. Women's ordination matters to me because I have felt the results of its lack in my life. When my husband and I were first married, and we had many big decisions to make, where to go to school, what jobs to take, when to have children, and how many, there were times when we would both pray about a big question and find that we received 2 different answers. I remember doubting my answers and thinking, he has given blessings to me and many other people, and I know God speaks to him. Maybe he knows better than the Spirit, than what the Spirit feels like, and my answer is wrong. Or maybe God prefers talking to him instead of me. Despite more prayer and scripture study, I doubted my ability to listen to the Spirit. While none of our resulting decisions were wrong, I regret not trusting myself and opening myself up to perhaps better answers to our questions. The current lack of ordination for women means that women do not get the same opportunities to tune themselves into the Spirit. Learning to bless and comfort through priesthood blessings is a beautiful physical way to bless God's children and receive inspiration by the Spirit. It would strengthen individual families and individuals in the church if priesthood was extended to all of us. I'm a Mormon, and I believe in and I hope for the ordination of women.
So since Heather put up her profile, she's no longer a stay-at-home mom. She has been trained as a data analyst and works full-time. She has become an activist. Unsurprisingly, most of the women supporters have become activists, but she has, for breastfeeding and for Mormon building bridges, in the democratic processes of American political. And one of the interesting things, too, she is an avid bicycle rider, and they don't own a car, so they bicycle everywhere they go. And she was able to get the church to install bike racks at the Oakland Temple and at her local chapel because they didn't have those. So she's making positive changes wherever she goes. One thing I wanted to talk about with Heather real quick was that when I asked her, when talking about ordination, she said that she talked about love languages. And this is really interesting because it was a new idea that nobody has touched on before. And some people have the love language of physical touch. And for her, she wanted to be a part of the priesthood so that she could give blessings because it's such a tactile experience. You get to lay your hands on your head or hold a baby or just express those things, father's blessings. She understands that in the temple initiatories that she has that experience of touch. But for her, being able to have the being receive the priesthood in order so that she can bless people through physical touch.
Tell the last line.
Oh,
Heather, what's Heather's last line of? Because Heather's still active in the church. And
okay, yes.
And then what we'll do is we'll take some questions. And then,
that's true. Okay. Oh, there we go. So then also, so this is the good thing about Heather. Thank you. And she says in her first congregation when we got married, they lived in Provo, Utah, and there was an older lady in her ward named Pearl who was in her 80s. And all the time in Sunday school or Relief Society, Pearl would tell the story of when she heard that the priesthood ban had been lifted in 1978. She was so excited, she called all of her friends and said, this is the greatest thing ever. And so Pearl would tell these stories often at church, and Heather remembered sitting there in Sunday school in well before ordained women, and she said that I'm going to be that old lady someday. I'm going to be the one telling these stories that I remember when women received the priesthood. And so that's So Heather is still attending. She goes to church all the time, and she is waiting for the day that she gets to be Pearl and tell the story of when women received the priesthood. So in conclusion, I want to just say that the most of these women have changed their relationship to the LDS Church, not that they're inactive, but they've changed how they participate. They changed their sales. They became advocates and activists for marginalized groups. They founded nonprofits. And almost all agree that the pain of community rejection was harsh, but they have found a happiness and contentment in their lives that was missing while they were active LDS or in their former beliefs. Overall, they have become empowered, emboldened, and enriched, and I think they are pretty amazing women, and I admire what they've done and who they've become.
Gina Colvin, when I interviewed her, she kind of ended it in a way that just keeps ringing through my head. She has interviewed a lot of ordained women supporters over the years for her podcast and on her blog, and she made the comment that she believes that ordained women supporters have been blessed and foreordained in a way that none of us would have realized. And she's like, we are all living our best lives now, and we've grown in ways we could never have imagined. And Gina made the statement that she believes Heavenly Mother has blessed that action. And I thought that that was quite poetic. So does anyone have any questions, comments?
This is probably a two-pronged sort of question. I'm a church organist, among other things, and I play not only in my own ward, but for other denominations as well. And I have worked frequently with women ministers in mainline Protestant churches, and I have no problem whatsoever. With the new emphasis in our church about ministering as opposed to previous home teaching, I find that I often seek women out as much for advice as I do men. So prong question number one is, what advice would you have for me as hopefully not a chauvinist male? And now the second thing is, I remember how the rescinding of the ban on black Africans to the priesthood kind of came in steps. I'm thinking about President McKay's lifting the ban in South Africa, that one and every man had to trace his ancestry back out of South Africa before he could be ordained to the priesthood. And then also in some of the Polynesian islands where he rescinded the ban on ordaining Polynesian men to the priesthood. It seemed to me like things came in steps. I keep wondering about this subject of women in the priesthood, if maybe it couldn't be done in steps, like, among other things, just being able to hold your baby for the blessing and naming, if that would maybe be a first step toward equality. So that's the second sort of question I have, and I've talked too much. I better sit down.
Okay, you take the first one.
And the first was...
Any advice as a male ally?
As a male ally. Amplify women's voices when you can. Defer to them in your wards. Support their ideas if you get to be a part of your ward councils. We have lots of stories of how things are changing individually in wards and in stakes, which is great. But until it's an institutional change, there's still going to be women whose voices are not heard and whose existence is minimized because of their gender. So there's speak up where you can and start helping change the minds and hearts of the members in your congregation.
And recognize that you're the exception and not the rule. So I think that recognition is... vital in understanding how to do that. So obviously we want lots more exceptions, but until that's kind of across the board, it's always going to be the exception and not the rule. Second part of your question, we've talked a lot about ordained women the board themselves have talked about it. There's been a lot of panels. Actually, last year at Sunstone, Nancy Ross, I think, did a panel similar to that. I think that women won't be happy with just suddenly being allowed to hold their babies. I'm pretty sure of it. But I think that it's also happening anyway. I think that I know that when I blessed my youngest child, I held him. I know that there are women who are saying, well, then I won't bless my baby in your congregation and I'll do it at my home. I don't need your blessing certificate. It's not technically an ordinance anyway. But so I think that, yeah, it's going to happen and change. I think lowering the missionary age that Abby brought up earlier is a step in that direction. I remember one of the priesthood actions we went to, we were there and Elder Oaks was talking about what the priesthood was and defining it, and he defined it in a much more historical way than had been talked about in probably 50 years. And he instantly, when we heard that, many of us, even at that action, because that was the first time it was allowed to be broadcast, right? And we were listening to it and being rejected from attending it at the same time, and we were like, he's talking to us. They're making way to be able to say that this is a policy, not a doctrine. And so if you listen closely and if you follow back on topics on those subjects, going back to that time and the past 5 years, you can kind of see a shift in that. I would hope that publicly stating it was a policy would be a huge step.
Very nice.
And then acknowledging our historical receiving of the priesthood would be a big step too. So we'll see. Any other questions?
Time for one more question.
Yep.
Can I just ask?
Yep.
When I first heard of the movement, I was very excited that people were getting involved and trying to get women more power in the church. But then the fact that it was asking for ordination is what I stopped in my tracks and thought, this is never going to happen. And why couldn't we have started by asking
Yeah, I love that question. So if anyone didn't hear, she asked if we ever look back and wonder, if we had asked for something smaller first instead of the big pie in the sky that might not ever happen, if we might have made more headway or if we regret it. And I'm going to unequivocally, boldly, very, very confidently, actually, answer for every person that's ever been on the Board of Ordained Women and say no. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Lori, is that a fair statement? I think that the reality is that there are lots of groups doing that. Feminist Mormon Housewives, the Wear Pants to Church movement. There's a Mormon Me Too movement going on right now. There's a lot of beautiful, amazing, fantastic activism work going on all of those subjects. There's a group that does women's blessings, and that own it, and that do it anyway, and don't ask permission, and ordain women themselves. We are asking for ordination, and we don't feel bad about asking for ordination, and it's okay to aim high. We have hope that it will happen one day. We have faith that it will happen one day. And we understand that it might take a while, but you can't be what you can't see. You can't. People don't even know what ordination is, and so we love talking about it, and the board discusses it all over the website all the time of what that might look like, and is there different levels of priesthood, and is there, you know, do women just get the Aaronic priesthood, and talking about that is vital and is important and is part of the growth of the movement and understanding that. So, Lori, go ahead, and then we're good. This is Lori, by the way. This is Lori Winder Stromberg. She's on the Board of Ordained Women. She's been on it for 5 years.
I would say I'm ordained women's answer to the question, isn't this a precipitous to ask for ordained? We've been asking for all of those little interim steps for 40, 50 years or more. And so it was time. It's 2018.
Amen.
Amen.
And
yeah.
Well, but asking to be ordained is a policy
change.
It's a
policy.
So whether that's asking to be ordained and being excommunicated for it, or there have been women asked, they've been excommunicated for not wearing a veil in the temple. So there, all of those steps have been done. They may not be known or public or as widely broadcast, but that has been done.
And I think I just want to remind people that one of the goals of ordained women, they just wanted the first presidency to pray about it. They wanted an answer. They wanted it to be prayed about. They would have accepted an answer of, we prayed about it. No, see you later.
If the answer
but there's
would have
been
come,
no response.
I think
there's been
I think
no
a lot
response
of us
from the institutional
really happy
church.
If they said, hey, we've prayed about it for the last 5 years and maybe not right now, I think a lot of people would be like, whew, so glad we weren't ignored. But we'll see. We'll see.